Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good morning. Welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Jim. He's the writer of Story Branding, Creating Brands That Stand Out. If you'd like to speak with Jim, please give us a call at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460. Jim, thank you for joining the program.
Well, good to be here. Thank you.
Great. I guess just to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself. And how did you get started in branding and marketing?
Well, I'm the CEO of ESW Partners, which is a mid-sized agency in Chicago. And I've been in the advertising business from the agency side of things for about 30 years. I guess I'm a thoroughbred ad guy. I studied advertising in school and from school started working at major agencies in Chicago, then in Los Angeles, New York, and then back to Chicago. What we do is understand, articulate, and sell brands. So I guess to answer your question how I got into branding, it comes with the territory.
Wow. Advertising guys, you guys have a real creative gift, a persona that you think outside the box in one sense when it comes to a brand itself. If you take a group of business leaders together and they think a certain way, but advertising guys have to be really creative, think outside of the box. I mean, you have to really dig deep to kind of get your ideas that you can share that's going to work on the table. Kind of tell us how that process works. If you come up with a brand, and how you know that, hey, you have a winner here, if that's making sense.
Well, different people will define winner differently. The way I define it is, whether in fact the brand communicates a value and or a belief that people can or want to emulate or aspire to. The extent to which that occurs and the extent to which it's presented in a way that communicates some identification with the prospect, I think is the extent to which you really have a winner. You know, you can't go out and talk about, rational facts and benefits. You can, up to a certain point, but there has to be some emotional resonance. There has to be some connection with the brand that goes deeper than the realization that if I buy this product, I'm going to get this benefit. It has to be associated with buying into a belief or buying into a value or subscribing to something that reinforces who I think I am and/or what I want to communicate to other people about who I am.
If, for example, if you go back to back in time and dealing with a product itself, when a product comes out, when a client comes to you and say, this is this product, but it might have a good story behind it, but this is not a really good name for the product. Why don't we refocus this way? Have you ever run into certain situations that you have to go with a client and say, hey, you might want to rethink this particular product because it is not making the connection that you see as a brand?
Often. happens all the time. Companies, entrepreneurs, people who have the vision for you know, what their product can do and what difference it can make, often have, you know, come from sort of a rational perspective. You know, they think in terms of, you know, if the consumer can get this out of the product, they will buy it, you know. And what we have to help them see and articulate is that, you know, ultimately they've got to get more than something functional out of their product, that it's got to resonate with them emotionally. So we come at it from a right brain perspective. And, you know, that's, I guess, the, you know, I guess what separates us from you know, the inventors or the people that actually come up with the products or the ideas themselves. And we often tell them, you know, hey, Apple wouldn't be Apple if it had it started out as a company that just said, okay, we have a platform that's easier to use, that's friendlier, that's more graphic, and that looks cool. They wouldn't be what they are today. Apple is Apple because of the ideal that it somehow embodies, the ideal of creative expression, of being different, of being unique, you know. And that's what we oftentimes have to do. We have to take those functional differences that the product provides or the brand provides and somehow communicate, in addition to what makes it different, you know, what difference this is going to make in your life and help you to, you know, better express who you are and what you want people to identify you with.
Okay. If we back up with Apple's situation, which is, that's kind of interesting story. Was a story out, I think, some time ago, not too long ago, about Steve Jobs, how he started as a hippie and, you know, done all these creative things, but was a creative mind. And it was a fun product. And I remember in the 80s when Apple came out, and it was the first PC, and then IBM came out with their version, which was cheaper. But people liked the Apple brand, but it was more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people will go ahead and pay the $1,000 more for it, for the graphic interface and the simplicity. Some people really couldn't afford it, because even during that time, to get a computer in the mid-80s, I remember it was costing $3,500, and this was like $1,000 more. But, you know, then it came to his challenges, and not until he came back into the company after being booted out is really he saw, hey, we really need to do things a little bit differently. And I know that you run into that same situation with some of your clients that comes to you and say, hey, you have to take this different approach from it. And some of them, I guess, your clients just don't even see it. Is there a particular brands, not particular brands, particular industries that are really, really hard to try to wrap a story around, if that's making sense?
Yes.
Is a few – go ahead.
The ones that come to mind are insurance and banking. they all say the same thing, basically, you know. And it's really hard because, you know, basically they're selling commodities. I mean, an insurance policy is an insurance policy. You know, some banks have – functional differences, but you know, they focus more on their functional differences than they do on their overall identity. And when it comes to banks and insurance, many of them tell us what they want us to think about who they are and what they believe in, and we don't like to be told what to think or how to perceive something. We like to figure that out for ourselves. And that's the, you know, that's the book I wrote, Story Branding, is really based on that. Somebody, Andrew Stanton, the creator of WALL-E and Toy Story and a few other books. He has a great presentation on TED for anybody who's interested. And he talks about the importance of, I'm trying to think what the the word is that he uses, the theory of 2 plus 2. It has something to do with the theory of 2 plus 2, that we don't like to be told what the answer to 2 plus 2 is. We like to figure out for ourselves. That's where the fun is. That's where, you know, the engagement comes from with stories and with brands. You know, we don't like to be told, you know, you're going to feel cared for, or we're friendly, or, you know, we like to kind of discern the extent to which they are friendly and or care for us ourselves. And I think that sometimes brands, especially in the area of banking and insurance, they sometimes get in their own way, you know, by telling us too much about how to think or who they are. It's like the guy who tells you how cool he is. You know, cool people don't tell you they're cool. They just don't. You know, the extent to which they tell you they're cool is the extent to which they are not cool. And that's often, I think, one of the biggest problems that those two categories and others experience.
So when a client comes to you to try to they're coming to your agency for advice, what do you sit down and tell them? You know, they make their presentation about their brand. I think most of us have the ideas of what happened in the 50s and 60s, what we've seen with advertising agencies. But what do you actually tell a particular company when they come to you looking for you to brand them?
Well, it could be, you know, a number of different things coming out of research that we might have done on them, something that we were able to find out about how they're perceived, and, you know, an insight or a problem that we believe needs to be overcome. Oftentimes that's a starting point. But where we try to get to is, and this is our philosophy, and it's not shared with everyone, and it really comes like out of this whole story branding approach, is we start with understanding what they stand for, not what they want to stand for necessarily, or who they think they should stand or what they think they should stand for. You know, we look for, like, you know, the real value that in fact permeates within their organization. Because that's where authenticity lies. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. brands try too hard, you know, to be what they think people want them to be. They go to focus groups and they say, you know, geez, would you like us to be this way or would you like us to be that way? And whatever the focus group says, they, you know, go, oh, well, maybe I should try this, you know, and then they try that. It doesn't work. And they go back to another focus group and they ask the same questions and they become something different. And over time, they become both confusing and ingenuous to consumers. So rather than create that problem, you know, we'd nip it in the bud from the beginning and try to define what the brand really stands for. We look into its history. We look into its vision. We look into, you know, its approach to its not only its customers, but how it approaches its employees. And by doing so, we extract the brand story. We never create the brand story. We always find it or explore it or excavate it within the brand itself. And that just happens to be our approach, which we obviously happen to believe in. But there are other approaches that different agencies use as well.
Okay. Any success stories that that a product, well, without naming it, out of fairness, it's really up to you, but for example, that came to you that was just a real tiny little company and the product definitely worked and really took off. Anything that really stands out to you that you kind of can share that particular story?
Sure. The story I tell is about a restaurant that maybe many of your listeners won't be familiar with because it's a regional restaurant. It's largely based in New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Chicago, major markets in the East and the Midwest. And the restaurant's called is Cozy, C-O-S-I. Uh-huh. And when we went to them, basically they had been advertising with a theme line, Simply Good Taste. And, you know, first of all, we acknowledged with them that they were really communicating something that anybody could communicate. And furthermore, you know, they were talking about sort of like the bare essential benefit that you want from a restaurant is, you know, good taste. We had to somehow, you know, ladder up or communicate what it was about their taste or the taste of their food that it would make it more impactful, more appealing. So we looked at their menu and we went into the restaurants and we talked to their people. And what we were able to determine is that their menu really is more exploratory than anything else. You know, you don't go there and just get hamburgers and, you know, the run-of-the-mill type of sandwiches. They have tandoori chicken, and they have, Italian beef. I mean, they have sandwiches that are very international in their, their whole cuisine was very international. And we went out and talked to consumers and found out that these were the same types of people that by nature are very exploratory. You know, these are the people that would always be on the cutting edge of technology, for instance. They'd be the ones standing in line the night before Apple, the new iPad is introduced. They're always looking for new experiences because that's a central value that motivates them. And it happens to be what motivates Cozy to do what it does. So we revised Simply Good Taste to a theme line that was life should be delicious. It was a belief statement that both Cozy upheld and the Cozy customer aspired to. So in effect, what we found was that resonant theme, if you will, that would attract people most likely to like what Cozy had to offer. And we went beyond talking about the benefit of good taste, and we talked instead about the value of exploration.
Wow. Kind of back us up regarding story branding. What is story branding?
Well, it's a planning approach that we used to help clients or brands, I should say, help brands become more like stories and less like sales pitches. A story is something that engages, inspires, and motivates, and it does it by communicating various values and beliefs. And we use a process that's detailed in the book to help us uncover and get underneath, you know, the product functions to understand and appreciate what the beliefs are that the brand story, if you will, needs to somehow communicate. To define story branding, it's really a process and approach where the brand becomes a story to be told.
Wow. And how does that particular system work?
Well, a story is nothing more than a character with obstacles and a goal. The story is about how the character deals with those obstacles to achieve a certain goal. So we substitute character for the brand, and the brand is made up of behaviors, things that it does, things that it provides, features and benefits, but it also consists of values, beliefs, motivations. There's reasons why that it is what it is. And we start by trying to understand the main character the way a storyteller would describe the hero of his story, or develop the hero of his story. The goal of the brand in our story is not just to create sales, albeit that's an important goal, but more importantly, it's to establish a long-lasting relationship with the prospect. It is to somehow connect with the prospect such that the prospect sees in himself the same things that the brand aspires to. And then the obstacles are the things that are really in the way of that connection being made. Maybe it's a misperception, maybe it's misinformation, maybe it's low awareness. There are a number of different obstacles that can, get in the way of that connection, and we identify what they are and what we have to do to knock them down. And that's essentially the approach. I mean, it's the most, I'm giving it to you in a very simplified way. The book
is
a lot more detail, but that is really our planning approach, and that's how we get to what the brand story is all about.
Okay. I know you mentioned one success story. Any sad stories or that didn't necessarily work the way you guys thought it would work out?
I have to go back into my career pre-story branding, I guess, to talk about some of those. I worked on the National Burger King account for a number of years, and we decided wrongfully that what Burger King needed to communicate was that it would make burgers the way you would make burgers if you made them the way they make them. In fact, that was a team line. It goes way back, but it was, we do it like you do it if you did it like we did it at Burger King. If you can believe that, I think it's the world's longest team line, which is mistake number one. People couldn't remember what
okay.
it was. but it really had no aspirational value to it. It's like, so what? People really wanted something more, like what McDonald's was providing. It was the whole, McDonald's is fun. It's not just good food, but it's fun. It's family. We were really scratching the surface by talking about, how to make a burger the right way. We were really in the area of functional difference as opposed to value difference, got clobbered by McDonald's. Consequently, I think Burger King continues to have identity problems largely because it continues to focus on those functional differences as opposed to, its identity. And when it does get into identity, like it did with that scary king or whatever it was that they were doing. I don't know if you recall that. It probably turned off more people than it turned on, So they're constantly in a start over mode because they've never really nailed, what they're all about in a way that could resonate with their target audience, the way McDonald's has been able to do year after year after year after year.
Wow. Yeah.
That is your question.
Yeah. The scary king.
That's right. Yeah.
Also, in your book, you talk about the I am statement. Can you tell what is the I am statement?
Well, it's a tool that we use typically advertising agencies, clients provide or detail what the creative approach should be for any given ad campaign with what they call a creative brief. And the creative brief is more or less a one-page document that defines the target need, identifies what the promise of the brand is, identifies support points that prove that, in fact, the promise can be delivered, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a very rational, sort of factual document. And the I am statement goes much deeper. And in effect, what we try to do is empathize with the prospect by writing a first-person mini biography that starts with the word I am. I am your customer, your future customer. This is what my life is like. This is what I need. This is how I feel. These are the values and beliefs I subscribe to. And by virtue of writing it down, it does one of two things. It first helps us to really put ourselves in the shoes of the consumer more than just an understanding of demographics or psychographics or whatever you want to call the graphics that merely scratch the surface of who the prospect is. And secondly, while writing it, it helps to bring up information needs. Can we really say that this person feels this way? Do we really know that for sure? You know, what more information do we need to garner before we can say safely that that, in fact, is how the aggregate consumer feels about this given situation or brand or what have you? And so it's a very taxing exercise, but it really helps us to become a hell of a lot more insightful about the prospect than we could be otherwise.
Wow. And then in your part three of your chapter, you say telling the story, the big T's versus the small T's.
Yeah, it's, the small T's or the small T truth is, it communicates a meaning that it's really your truth. It's what you think of yourself. You know, it's like the cool guy coming in and saying, I'm a cool guy, that's his truth. But the big T truth is your takeaway. it's the meaning you ascribe to that person who tells you how cool he is, and your big T truth may be this guy's not cool at all, because he wouldn't tell me he's cool if he was, and so that big T truth is the more important truth, how you're coming across, not just by what you say, but how you say it is far more truthful and more important to the person on the receiving end than the truth that you provide as a sender of information.
A couple of questions here. If you had an ideal client, what would you like to see out of that client? If they came to you for services, hey, this person has everything that I want, and I don't have to reinvent the wheel. If they came to you, what do they really need to have to give to you?
Well, first and foremost, the vision, knowing why they're doing what they're doing. That goes beyond the profit motive. You know, we just had a client come in a couple weeks ago, and she's starting a wellness center. And, we asked her, okay, so what is it, if you could describe what it is that you want to communicate to the world, what would that be? And she basically said that movement is everything. And I said, what do you mean by that? And she said, until you move your body, you really don't experience life to the fullest. Movement is where satisfaction comes from, and movement is everything, basically. And I'm oversimplifying this to make the point, but the point was she knew exactly what her business was about. She knew exactly what values she wanted communicated through her brand. We didn't have to dig deep, as we oftentimes do, to extract the value. She put it right out there for us to take and work with. You know, not that we don't mind doing the work that needs to be done, but it's certainly a lot easier when an entrepreneur, a brand, will come to us and say, this is what I believe. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. This is what I want to share with the world. This is the difference I want to make. Oftentimes, you know, we're presented with, well, we need to increase our share by 5 points next year, or we need to increase shareholder value or improve our return on investment from leads. And those are, yes, important goals, but that's not what, you know, is going to turn on the consumer. We've got to somehow translate what the brand is all about in a way that is going to resonate with consumers and help us to achieve those financial goals that we're often presented with.
Is selling to consumers a lot easier than selling to business to business? Or are they pretty much this different categories themselves, but they're kind of equal? Or is one kind of a lot easier than the other?
Easier. I don't know if I can say it's easier. The challenge is different. You know, with business to business, it's usually very, very rational. You know, it's okay. very, very, you know, we provide, you know, our benefit is less downtime. You know, your plant's going to be up longer because our products don't break down. You know, we sell things like durability and efficiency and, you know, rational kinds of benefits. And oftentimes they're exclusive and they're important and they're unique and they can be communicated just for what they are. But even in the case of business to business, the challenge is to take those rational benefits and somehow translate them into a human value. And that, for business to business, is very, very challenging. Because business-to-business people don't typically think in terms of human values like consumer goods providers do. For consumer goods providers, the challenge is it's looking within in a way that aligns the whole company. You'll go into a company and one side, you know, with management, and one side of the table think this is what we believe is important, and the other side of the table says, oh, no, that's not as important as this. You know, so the challenge there is aligning the company around one value, one single-minded focus, as opposed to the many that are made available to us. So, you know, they're both equally challenging and different in what they are.
Okay. And the last question here is regarding the competition. You know, there's always room for someone to be at the top. We talk about competition. If someone come out with for example, on Shark Tank, this lady came out with another cookie company. Well, you know, Mrs. Fields, it ran its course. You know, it was dominant in the 80s and 90s. Then it now comes, you know, in the past, you had the cookie company came out in the 90s. Then another person coming in. Is there, for competition, can you always say there's always room to compete, regardless of whatever the product is?
It depends. There is such a thing as oversaturation. And, you know, I mean, I just read that Kraft dropped Greek yogurt from their array of brands because that category is now overly saturated. It's really, really hard, very expensive to get noticed. And I can't offer a judgment as to whether that was a good decision or a bad decision, but I do know that those kinds of decisions get made, you know, in light of how much it's going to cost and the likelihood of success given the number of competitors that are already doing something similar. I don't know if I could say in the absolute sense that there's always room for another competitor, because sometimes realistically there isn't. I would do everything to make sure that the decision was right before I made it, but I would be open to seeing the reality as opposed to denying the reality if, in fact, doing so would get me into trouble.
Okay. Talking about media today, before we go into the closing comments regarding, I guess, advice you would have, if, number one, if someone's looking for an advertising agency, then we'll talk about where we can get your book. But talking about the marketing itself today, we're moving out of traditional TV, radio, newspaper, and magazines. Now this movement of social media, tweets and Facebook and blogs and so forth, what do you see this particular industry in the next 5 years?
Wow. I think that brands are going to have to become a lot more – well, first of all, they're very transparent. They're much more transparent than they used to be. If I want to know how, before buying this product, if I want to know how it performs, I can easily find that out by going onto forums, by checking them out with friends on Facebook to see if they've used it, by looking at reviews, et cetera. So, believability is being called into question. So brands have to be more true in terms to themselves and to their consumers in terms of what they're promising and not only what they're promising, but how they're delivering against that promise. It's too easy to find hypocrisy. It's too easy to find inconsistency, in between what you say and what you do. It's not like it used to be, because consumers are very information rich. And I think that brands are already starting to be more accountable, but we'll have to even work harder to be accountable in the future.
Wow. Has the social media impact has made a difference with advertising? I mean, I know you're talking about the transparency. Is it making it harder or is it making it slightly easier to launch a brand today?
Well, there's pluses and minuses on both sides of the sheet. I think it's harder and easier. What's harder is the accountability piece I just talked about. But what's easier is that there's more avenues to exploit or to take advantage of. To be heard, there are more creative ways to get your message across. It used to be okay. It was film and audio, and now it's video. It's interactive. It's engagement, involvement. It's content. It's just all kinds of resources that we have now that we never had before. And I think it makes our life easier in terms of giving us a bigger palette to paint with. We're not limited to what we can do. And the way our creativity isn't as limited as it used to be.
Okay. Any advice that you would have in closing to companies out there looking to advertise their product and looking for an agency?
Well, if they're looking for an agency, my advice is the number to call. if they are introducing a product or if they have a product that they're trying to reposition or improve its positioning, my advice is to go deep. By that I mean understand what the purpose of the brand is beyond its function. Understand why it's there, why it exists. There's a great book by Simon Sinek, First Ask Why. And I highly recommend anybody read that book. It is I believe, it really communicates an important first step that anybody in marketing really needs to take, understanding why you're doing what you're doing and what the value is that you want to be associated with. As far as finding an agency, I would find an agency that can not only help me to define what that value is, but help me to communicate it in a way that is going to resonate and engage the customers that I'm going after.
Okay. Great. Lastly, where can we find your book? And also, how can, if they're looking at an agency or course, I'm not sure your agency specializes in certain things, how can they contact your agency?
Well, the book, you can access that via my blog, which is www.storiati.com, Storiati.
Mm-hmm.
And my agency is ESW Partners, and you can access our website by going to ESWPartners.com. You can also get the book off of Amazon, any bookstore, online, e-books. It's in e-book form. It's in hardcover form. It's readily accessible.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you for joining the program. I mean, I appreciate you sharing this wealth of information about your book and about the advertising business itself. Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate you coming on to the show.
Okay. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Have a great day. Again, it's been another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com.